And here we go. That is the beautiful Easy to Love by Ella Fitzgerald. All music that you will hear on this show is available for immediate listening and streaming for purchase on the Sunday Morning Jazz Vocals on Apple Music or wherever you listen to your music. We live in a difficult and dangerous time where people are frightened to make change because of unseen destructive forces. These forces seek to repress innovative thought and true creation. People want to suppress factual but differing opinions because they don't want to be found out to be the frauds that they are. I'm just grateful. And I'm here quoting a Minnesota politician of all people, Paul Wellstone, who's actually speaking the truth. I know, novel when you're a politician, but we all do better when we all do better. In our creative endeavors, in our daily work, strive to do good, educate, pull, or push all of us to become better versions of our current self. I change my mantra to seek, dream, hustle, repeat. And I hope that this podcast will be a better version of any previous podcast, because as I seek to endeavor to create something that's going to actually encourage and inform someone, and that's how I'm going to start out this podcast, another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. And I'm hopeful that my musings on what I'm reading, what I'm watching, my reaction to COVID and its effect on creators, the Rittenhouse verdict and Adele's new music, why we should really be listening to the originator, Janet Jackson. I think this is going to be one of those episodes that I had to produce and publish because it could have been like 3-4 hours long. But I hope you stay to the end and enjoy it as much as I have enjoyed creating it. Sexpition by Janet Jackson, her Demita Joe album. And what am I doing listening, going from Ella Fitzgerald, who I'm sure also encouraged her, to Demita Joe? This my selection for this section of the podcast, it comes not as a surprise, I guess, to you, but also to me. This is my way to honor her by, number one, buying and replaying her music. There was a hashtag that was out, Free Janet Jackson, and Justice for Janet, a number of years ago, and it kind of came up when I was actually watching a special on FX about her 2004 wardrobe malfunction that virtually ended her career. And this was when this album was supposed to be released. And this is Janet at her peak. And it seems like the world never got to experience it because of stupidity. The whole thing was just so incredibly dumb. When you look at the debacle that became the what absolutely became the that happened during the halftime special of the Super Bowl. MTV would not be invited to produce the halftime, and how far they've come, because now Jay-Z and are bringing back not necessarily controversial performers, but they are bringing back that flair that they tried to repress or suppress during the heyday of the Super Bowl. How far they've come from when Colin Kaepernick tried to take a knee. How dare Janet Jackson bring sex into the Super Bowl. But the way all of that went down, and I'm glad I'm actually talking about this now. I'm finding it just, it blows my mind every single day as I read the paper and I prepare for my podcast, how many things I'm learning that I did not know. You know, I talk about freedoms and our lack thereof in a later part of the show when I talk about Kyle Rittenhouse and that debacle of a verdict, and also COVID. And I think the whole show and the whole theme of the show is our lack of freedom and how racism and misogyny affects all of us and everything that we do, and how it can be pinned back, goes back to the slavery and enslaved frame of mind, and how all of these things affect decisions and how we interact with each other, and how it also points to how restrictive our society is. So what am I rambling about? Back in 2004, and I think I was at the height of, I had actually just the prior year, I separated honorably from the Air Force. I was just out of the military, and I was practicing as full-time, primarily as a pediatric hospitalist for a practice in Lumberton, North Carolina. And so I realized just how out of touch or not in touch with things that how I was at that time. And I do not recall, I recall buying and listening to everything that Janet Jackson had made prior to the release of her Demita Jo album in 2004. But I was, one of the things that I wasn't aware of, because I don't even think I watched the Super Bowl that year, because I think Dallas, if Dallas wasn't playing, and I wasn't even a big super fan of Dallas then as I am now, but I digress. But I was not aware of what was truly going on in America at that time. There was a whole bunch of things that everybody thought that America was getting too wild, and they were becoming too free of sexual expression, and they wanted this. There was a whole big conservative swing to the right from the Democrats and the Republicans. This is before Al Gore. Now I get why Al Gore divorced Tipper Gore, because I can't imagine being in his white bread Mayflower house. I can't even imagine that. But there were parents for respectable TV, and there were a whole bunch, and a lot of conservative people from the Midwest that wanted us to go back to everyone to be back to conservative, Bible thumping, foot washing, whatever, conservative, white, paternalistic American values. And so when Janet Jackson, this is when Janet Jackson was at her peak. She, at the peak of her craft, body was slamming, and she dared to deviate from this puritanical white male, white bread domination. And she was doing a very good job of it until the Super Bowl, where She was being welcoming, and she had she welcomed the exposure because her album was getting ready to drop. That had been 2 years in the making. And when you listen to it, if you picked up on that Sexhibition, it was quintessential Janet. And if you listen to the other parts of the album, and I encourage you to listen to it, there's plenty of time for you to listen to music. If you basically focus your time in doing other things instead of mindlessly watching reality TV or the news, you'll have plenty of time to stream Adele's as well as Janet as well as Summer Walker's new album. But with all of those things, with the indecency movement and conservative views backlash, everybody punked out on Janet Jackson. She basically almost had, it took almost 30 years for her to get back everything that 9.7 millisecond of exposure of a star of her nipple or her nipple. What that took from her. She also, at the same time, if you also look at this, is when Britney Spears also entered into one of the, not long after this, Britney Spears also went into the longest conservatorship that just recently got released. And all of these things within the last few weeks have happened. And there was very similar, and the backlash, the very similar per one person who admittedly failed both of these women, sacrificed their career aspirations, Janet more so than Britney. Justin Timberlake was willing participant in the demise and the destruction of both of these women. And I hate to use cancel culture, but cancel culture was alive from a conservative standpoint. She was canceled. She became persona non grata. This album was one of the lowest spins on MTV. She left Virgin because of it. And it was one of her poorest performing albums since the two albums that she dropped before she made her Control album. All because she wouldn't kiss the ring of the now disgraced former CEO of CBS. She apologized, and I think she did an amazing job of doing it. And what she's done now is tame in comparison to some of the antics that we're seeing from the Meg the Stallions and Old Time Road Dude, Little Nas X. Some of those performances, I'm there for it, don't get me wrong. However, it's definitely more risque than her showing a star on her pierced nipple in the halftime, the NFL halftime. And she just was completely canceled. And it took a wave of internet activism to basically get Control to go back to number one. I'm hopeful. I don't know. I'm never a trendsetter. I'm not sure what's absolutely trending. But I'm hopeful that this, me doing this little part and talking about this album, will also maybe get this album the coverage that it deserved back then, because this is Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis's crowning glory, and as well as one of the crowning glory of Janet Jackson. And she's like me. She's a lot thicker now in her middle age. And that's fine, but this album is completely beautiful, and it was she at her peak, and they came for her simply as an overreaction and to put a woman a black woman in her place. It smacks of racism. It smacks of paternalism. It smacks of misogyny. And all the people that went hard on her, as I said, they're no longer in the business. Either they are no longer part of the Grammy, the head of the Grammy, because the Academy Music had a shakeup at the beginning of this year. The CEO that was of CBS, he toppled because of sexual misconduct. Justin Timberlake has had to fall on his sword, and in particular apologizing to both and admitting that he profited from a career standpoint and from a bank account standpoint for failing women. And he was allowed, and he's still doing well. But nobody's canceled him, but they're finally uncanceling Janet Jackson, you know, as well as, and then the conservatorship, that the longest conservatorship on the history of conservatorships finally ended with Britney because, again, of gangster social media activism, and in a positive way. And I'm hopeful that now that she has some of these freedoms and she gets a good team that truly is will assist her in helping to manage her millions, the rest of her millions in her life, Britney can go on, but also Janet Jackson can go on. And I don't know if she wants to, you know, and that's okay too. She got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame finally. She has her kid, and she's free from a very restrictive marriage, I understand. She went from one hopper to the other, from the allegedly abusive relationship with one of the DeBarge brothers to this prince, and then from her originally from her father. But, and then body shaming, starting with her own family and to the media. And they are the ones that effectively allowed these fools to cancel her. But I'm hopeful me talking with and been making sure that everybody knows that what the music is absolutely coming from will encourage you guys to also stream it, because the way it works now, if she has any residuals that are connected, and I'm hopefully somebody had the foresight to actually write this into the contract, and I'm hopeful she owns the masters. Every time we stream or listen to this music and it gets some type of play and people give it, it's just due. So I'm going in heart and everything on iTunes, but y'all need to cut a check. Y'all need to give Janet Jackson her due. So that's why I'm going to have this album probably on rotation and repeat, for that simple reason. Not just to play during my show, but also to play while I'm driving in my car, while I'm dropping something off at one of my friend's house, while I'm taking a shower, because I want her to get her props. I want, number one, I want to listen to the album, because I don't recall hearing any of this on the radio, but I don't recall listening to a whole bunch of music at this time on the radio outside of, oh, I was into Benny Goodman and other things at this particular time. But she's a creative, she's an artist, she is a musician, she is a singer. She gets her props, she gets her praise. It's completely tied to us streaming her music. Just like everyone returns Mariah Carey's music single for Christmas to the number one every single year around this time leading up to the 1st of January, we need to make an effort that our living legends like Miss Janet Jackson, Miss Janet, or Miss Jackson if you're nasty, also gets her prop. What are we doing to ensure that we honor her, give her her flowers now by listening to her music. When you have other creators talking about your stuff, that's when you know you've arrived. She may not ever hear about me playing her music, but am I going to keep that hashtag going, Justice for Janet going? Yes, I am. And every single time I can think of it, I'm going to be streaming her music because of my support for what she, who she is and what she's done, and also as a protest against what was done to her. And the repay is a bitch, because everybody that came out against her and they knew they were wrong on one wrong foot have all paid for it in spades.
I go by the name of Kinda Louis Vuitton. Nah, I want my homegirl. Who need to hook me up with some of her homegirls? Yeah. Janet Jackson.
We back, baby.
I don't care whatever you say about Kanye West. Back in the day when he was still just a musician, he actually, before he put on the MAGA hat, he made some great music. My Baby, where he's featured with Janet on Janet Jackson's Demita Joe album, is one of those such creations. And again, this is on her album from 2004, Demita Joe. That's My Baby, featuring Kanye. And this is a great segue into this next portion, because the podcast itself is a very simple entity. I primarily started it as a mechanism to entertain myself during a period of time where I was working in a place that I hated, and there was really nothing on TV. I could have been listening to Janet Jackson, just saying, all that entire time, or even Adele, or even anybody. But I created a podcast specifically to talk about what I was reading or et cetera. It has morphed into a spinoff where I talk about Star Trek and the NASA space program, and it's also serves as a platform for my own writing now. I found out the hard way that I did not want to get removed from any of the other podcasting like YouTube with potential copyright infringement. So I will refrain from playing too much of even Janet's music, as well as any author's any creator's music. And also, I'm very hesitant to read excerpts from any of the books that I'm reading or listening to on Audible. But I will and have been writing essays, etc., about what I'm reading. And I've gotten back to that in spades. I've added many books recently, biographies and autobiographies of different artists, and it's been really revealing about what I'm learning about the artist that I did not know even existed. And I talked about Will Smith's new biography last week, but I'm coming back to it because I'm planning on ordering it and a couple of other books that I'm very interested in, and listening to this other tennis star, Serena Williams's last book. It's not really a biography. It technically, I guess, the book written by, and I'm going to have to navigate to Audible. Hopefully the recording won't pause, but I am, can't remember the name of the author, Melissa Lawrence Corbett, who wrote Serena Williams, tennis champion, sports legend, and cultural icon. Because, of course, I have a streaming service of everything, and King Richard actually dropped this week. But Will Smith's book, his attachment to Richard Williams, the part he plays and why I get the Oscar buzz, as well as to the supporting roles of Ingenue, as well as the two little girls as supporting actors and actresses, I think this is, I really get why he connected so well and did so well with the role, and why everyone should watch the movie itself. If you navigate to my podcast, the extended podcast notes, my post on WordPress, you'll actually find the trailer to the movie does not do the movie itself justice. I've watched the movie now twice, and I swear I pick up something new with it. One of the things that I think what connected Will with the part was it was about icon building, how Will and his experience and his carefully crafted public persona belied feelings of inadequacy and cowardice and high anxiety, and how his father and the demands and the aggressions of the real world, how his own father took a very different route for trying to train Will, his sister, and his brother to deal with a racist world, and how Richard Williams took a very different route to prepare his daughters, five in total, for a very different world, really not ready for them, and how they were going to be superstars. He never had a plan for it, no deviations for it, and he was not going to allow anyone to, one, corrupt his money stream, but not destroy his daughters before they or from burning out or from injuries or not being able to recover from those injuries. He was about icon building. He said very poignantly that I also recognize, because I'm also listening to the Audible version of the biography written about Serena Williams. But he said emphatically, the world would not respect Richard Williams, but the world will respect Venus and Serena. He had his plan did not have corporal punishment and psychological punishment in as part of how he was going to build tennis superstars. It was all about honing the craft, getting the mind right for tremendous success, but also how to deal with failure as you're trying to become successful. His tactics, some deemed very extreme, and it could, and as I said, it could have gone either way. He could have become as abusive, as physically abusive, as Will Smith's father was, and eat at the last few months of his life had Will plotting his murder, but he didn't do it. He just thought about it and he worked it out with his therapist. But, and also held them back from being raised like he was, to protect them and to strengthen them for an abusive world. They became the abusers. He was creating phenomena. He wanted and expected greatness, and he chose to get that without having to beat the crap out of his kids. Verbally lashing, it didn't seem that way either. He was strong, and he meant what he says, consistency, and they bought into it because it produced results. He never pitted the sisters against each other. He used each talent and successes to encourage the other, and celebrate it by still remaining humble. He showed them more love than the world would ever show them. He was the businessman, media mogul, and he stood by his word. His wife, Oracine, or Brandy, they were all on the same page. They were all preparing their girls for greatness. And it was like And it wasn't that they did it and to exploit them. He basically let them have these massive contracts. Venus Williams, at a very young age, signed like a $12 or $13 million contract. And he basically said, all this is all I need. I want to work for this tennis greats organization, salaried. And everything they got, it was for their good. The contract that they signed was for their good. It doesn't seem that the management was parasitic. Like, I remember Gary Coleman, his family, running through his money. There's several, child stars that basically lament how their families completely mismanage their finances and they end up on the bread line. This was definitely not in the Williams family, because each one of these girls signed very lucrative athletic contracts and then have gone on to be influencers and sponsors and head of their own conglomerates, still making that money on and off the tennis court. Very well-rounded. Can you imagine the heartbreak that this guy had to live through? He had to swallow and then keep it moving. You can see in one of the scenes, he was barely there, working two jobs, completely exhausted, getting beat down by local gangsters and the white tennis establishment. It all seems so crushing, but he remained focused, and he focused on their talent and increasing their talent. But also, he took the body blows to protect them from the same body blows. Wouldn't burn up on their way up. And also landing softly, but having the greatest comeback when the road did get bumpy. That's how they were raised, and that's how, and it prepared them so brilliantly for a world of sport. In a sport in the world that truly wasn't ready for them. But he prepared them in such a way that they came with braids and white beads ablazing to the world of tennis, setting it on fire, burning up the restrictions, and becoming phenomena and the greatest true goats, paving the way for the Naomi Osakas and the Coco Gauff. Us knowing greater Black tennis players other than Arthur Ashe, they would make their imprint and change the sport forever. When they asked Venus what she wanted to do with tennis, and she said she wanted to win more Wimbledons than any other player, and that she did. And when they asked Serena, she said she wanted people to play like her. And I don't know, if that ain't some boss-ish, I don't know what is. Slow and steady was his brilliant tactic. He kept to his plan because he knew once he got his foot in the door with those girls' massive potential for earnings and their cachet, he knew there was no turning back. It ticked off everybody that so many, because they had to bend to his will, and bending to the will of who they perceived as an uneducated Black man who was completely educated as far as tennis and business and how business of tennis were one and the same for the success of his girls. And also, he recognized early on that they not only were to represent the sports greatly, they would become a shining light for every Black girl from their circumstance, from Compton of all, where the Crips were walking in, and they were young, and he knew they had to be mentally and physically strong to be able to stand up or under that much weight. I can't imagine. Also, having the kahunas to basically call out the white privilege as such, and to make those privileged dudes that have been used to dealing, doing certain things a certain way for so long. He told them to take many seats, and they did. How straight gangster is that? Because they knew if they had to come through him to get to the phenom, so what were they going to do? They had to do it the Richard Williams way, and that's why he's king. I think it's straight gangsters, and this is one of those movies, if you want to feel good about positive black images, positive family images, love, working hard, a hustle, you have to see this movie. That is R&B Junkie by Janet Jackson on her 2004 Demita Joe album. And I'm going to open up this homage, I guess her homage to R&B, and a celebration of it with a kind of an up-tempo beat and vibe that is so quintessential, not just Jermaine Dupri, but also Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, the old Jack, new Jack Swing of the age, and I just love it. That is, again, the Janet Jackson sound, and I'm so glad I'm have the ability to listen to it and listen to it in total. And I encourage the listening audience to do the same. Go to wherever you listen to music and stream her music as often as much as possible. Again, you have time to listen to great music. There's a whole bunch of great albums that are being released. There's time for all of us to listen to them as well as to the originators, the Janet Jacksons of the world. And we all have time is of essence, and you think time we're winding up. We're still in the midst of a COVID pandemic when you see the things that are happening in the world today that you would think that it would be just the opposite. COVID has wreaked havoc, not just on our health system, but just on the general health of the creative community. Before Broadway opened back up, before they started being able to start production on a lot of great shows, including one of my favorites of recent years, Star Trek Discovery, or any Star Trek, anything recently. It has done so many things to creatives and pitfalls and whether the protections. I think some of countries have gotten it have done a better job of managing our recovery as creators in these uncertain times. And so when I commission Ramsha from Pakistan to write COVID effects of creatives in her country or just in general, of course, she came through like brew and was able to create a very poignant piece that you can actually read in total on my Dell's Angels Inc. blog. And this is how I titled this past week. 10-4 wants you to read COVID effects on the creatives and recovery within our community. The creative sector has a fair share in the overall economic footprint, in creating employment opportunities and contributing to having a positive social impact through several channels while also spurring innovation across the economy. Unfortunately, as things stand, it is among the most heavily affected of sectors, especially in large urban centers where employment of many involved are at risk in the backdrop of the societal and economic fallout of the ongoing pandemic. The venue-based sector in particular has to bear the brunt of the financial stress caused by significant declines in revenue due to social distancing measures. Reduced revenues have led to reduced wages and increased layoffs for creative professionals, many of whom are already operating on margins of financial stability, not to mention the employment in the creative sector itself precarious as to sustain their livelihoods. Creative professionals, artists, performers, musicians, etc., have to take on numerous projects as freelancer at times in addition to working a part-time salary job if these contracts or projects aren't lucrative enough. What further makes these projects a precarious undertaking is the general lack of access creative professionals then have for acquiring income replacement benefits. The absence of such safety nets makes them highly vulnerable to economic shocks, especially in those cases where they don't have a part-time job to fall back on. Indeed, the COVID-19 pandemic has brought into focus how such employment opportunities in the creative sectors tend to fall through the cracks when it comes to receiving public support. In the absence of a public safety net aside, up-and-coming creative professionals as well as those seeking re-employment will have to navigate through long-term financial challenges posed by changing dynamics. The social distancing measures that were put in place early on in efforts to curb the spread of the pandemic led to fewer people showing up at creative events, which led to aforementioned reduced wages or layoffs, and simultaneously this reduced public demand then led to reduced investments in the creative sector. It was like a never-ending cycle. Even if investment starts pouring back in as the lockdowns are ending globally and nations reopening with curbs to movement and public gatherings being lifted, the pandemic has chipped away at the purchasing power of the working class, and so it would be quite some time for public demand in the sector to reach back up to pre-crisis levels. However, in the meantime, during the recovery phase, the needs of these creative professionals can be responded to, keeping in view their unconventional form of work. Austria's Recovery Fund for Artists is a good example. Under this policy, the Social Insurance Fund for Artists was increased by 5 million euros to compensate them for losses they suffered due to event cancellations. Similarly, Belgium's temporary unemployment scheme recognizes the aforementioned short-term contracts creative professionals undertake. Policies with long-term recovery objectives, such as the initiative by New Zealand in supporting the sustain of redeployment of creative professionals through a nearly $8 million New Zealand dollar fund, is also noteworthy in this regard. As I said, it seems as if many other countries have a social safety net in place because it knew that, okay, we're going to have to all shut down, tighten our belts, but we need to make this landing as safe as possible for everyone, not just an elite few, but how can we do this effectively? Money management and a way for the government to truly be effective working. We could learn so much from these developed countries if we were more open to these suggestions. It wasn't so divided and so divisive. And it would be a way that if you're going to tax me, this is a good way to spend the money. And it's not welfare Technically, it is welfare because this is how you take care of your people in a time. If you're going to shut us down, this is how you can still make it sustainable for everyone and not make it so divisive and say some crazy things just so you can line your pockets and not help the people that absolutely be helped, that need to be helped. But who am I? This is just my opinion as I sit in safety and warmth in my own house. I can still suggest these things, but doesn't mean anybody has to believe me or take the suggestions because there are some applicability to what I'm actually saying. We got to do a better job. If you're going to have taxes this much, you got to do a better job so we can absolutely see it taking care of the people that you are taxing for.
Jay, Joe, Dunk, Booty, Demita Joe. Isn't that like a country name, Demita Joe? It is, isn't it? The Demita I don't think is country, but it's the Joe that's country. It just happens to be my father's name. Well, my mother is from the South, so Demita Joe.
And that was an interlude country on Janet Jackson's 2004 Demita Joe album. All the music that you've heard throughout this particular podcast is available for immediate listening and streaming on iTunes or wherever you get your music. And I'm rounding out this episode with this last, and I'm hoping it's not a sad note or a negative note. It's just that I don't plan on talking about, writing about this in any detail, probably in the upcoming week or so. I'm going to probably just mention it as it how it affects me in my creative process. But other than that, I'm not going to expend another iota thinking about or dwelling on how the justice system in this country, when it's not doing its job to enforce laws, is garbage. So, and how in so many ways the justice system and the government continues to fail people of color. And here you go. Kyle Rittenhouse, a jury of your peers finds you not guilty of vigilantism, and it was okay for you, an underage kid, to carry an assault rifle to a rightful protest. You were the only violent one there. That was probably the greatest point pointed out to one of, and yes, I'm going to say victims, of his rampage on that horrible night in 2020. We can't talk about race or white privilege in this country simply because when we don't, and you squash the 1619 Project and erase it from critical race theory, from, or you defund schools that dare to discuss critical race theory, it's just another way to perpetuate white privilege. And how these white conservatives, with every little Karen and Kyle, don't want them to feel bad about the perpetuation of racism when you do stuff like this. We are then again asked to express our outrage nonviolently, turn the other cheek, don't protest or get mad or riot. Okay, sure, I'm not going to do that because I'm too lazy and my knee hurts. But people are tired of just having to swallow it and always being able to take the higher ground and having to be the better human. Okay, I can do that. So I'll just write my outrage. But really, the verdict itself reaffirms if you're brown, black, female, male, you are likely to die from a bullet, because that's what triggered all of the protests in Kenosha. You can get suffocated as a black man in Minnesota, or you could get shot in your bed. You're not safe here. But you can't say anything. You can't protest, because now it's okay for anyone to walk around with an illegal semi-automatic weapon to break up the protest. Because that's exactly what y'all told me. That's what told all of us. We weren't really surprised with the verdict, because we knew the little white boy crying on the stand was going to be accepted. And we knew at that point that, actually, I knew from when the judge banned them from the victims of the gunshots to be called victims. I knew this, the verdict was not going to be in a positive light. I also thought that the arrest of the guy that threatened a politician, he's probably going to get more time than this fool walked into a protest and shot those people that were protesting unfair and excessive force. And I get that irony. But as again, I don't want to end my podcast on negativity, because there's some positivity that has come out from this. We know it's not acceptable, and it never will be acceptable in a world and in a country that thinks the actions of the Kenosha police shooting Jacob Blake in the back was okay. And it was okay to give this unstable white kid a pass on vigilanteism. The prosecution was trying to throw this trial from the beginning, and they did a really good job of it. Because they did not prove, you couldn't approve reckless homicide or manslaughter, get that for any of those verdicts that would have stripped this kid of his ability to carry any weapon if they had just gotten one of those felony convictions. He couldn't even do that. I don't know if he didn't believe in his guilt or he was just completely a wuss and refused to prosecute or to the best of his ability. This teenage vigilante and this dumbass judge instructing the prosecution not to protect the victims. What are we going to do to get out of this, to not become victims? I think it's going to do the opposite, and it should do the opposite, because I'm thinking, is there justice anywhere in the U.S.? Will I be safe? Probably, from my standpoint, it just makes me become more of a hermit. But there are a lot of people that are daring them. I'm still going to protest, because now it's going to mean something, and now they're going to become a martyr. It's going to have the exact opposite effect. You're not going to shut people up because they are scared of staring down the barrel of a semi-automatic weapon. What it is going to potentially change the laws so unstable teenagers don't get access to these. That's what it should do. But it should continue the protest for the change in gun laws, as well as in the change in police brutality. If you can absolutely change those things, then we won't have to protest. We won't have to become hermits. We won't have to have these multi-million dollar payouts to the Elijah McCain families of the world because people don't have to act right. What if you can do is you could use the money to better train people to do the right thing and to make it harder for unstable kids to get these semi-automatic weapons. And maybe we won't have to all get strapped. But it's also encouraging me to use my time in a better means. I basically paused my newspaper. I'm dedicated to spending the last few days of the National Novel Writing Month and creating and writing and just being in the moment, using art, music, and photos and food as my inspiration. Reading more, listening to more biographies, without the need to get all of this outside filter or triggers that are triggering from the news and from social media. I plan on using this instance as a way to shut it down, disconnect, and to create my own joy uninterrupted. And I challenge the listeners to do the same thing. Sometimes, well, after you listen to my podcast, that is, and share it with some people, I challenge y'all to do the same thing. Disconnect and avoid those things that trigger anger and anxiety. Just a Little While by Janet Jackson in her Demita Joe album from 2004. You know, as I said at the top of the show, you know, there's a lot of great music that is absolutely out there for us to listen to, and we should take the time to listen to Adele's new album, as I said before, dropped this week. Summer Walker, also album dropped this week, which harkened back to Mary J. Blige and just made me also write a note to myself. They said Summer Walker's new album harkened back to Mary J. Blige at the peak of her pain, when she was in her destructive era of drug use and abusive relationships, how that album reflects back to her. But I also suggest that we look at what these creatives use to create great music to entertain us and to make us feel great. With Adele, it was her divorce and her feelings of failure and depression of blowing up her son's life. Summer Walker, she should have listened to all the baby mamas from her once bed mate, and now she has a child. She's going through some things with them. With Janet Jackson, she was becoming sexually evolved by the trauma of her past, and then they used it to basically suppress her. But through it all, there is the music, and she actually seems like 20, 30 years too late, but the music itself is supporting us in our times when we're going through pain, and how we look at how we are going to respond to the pain and to the isolation. This is my passion project, and I hope that me interweaving the music and interweaving the themes of loss and of perseverance is apparent in everything that I do. Janet Jackson has influenced me, and I hope that my production will influence you to create your own. Again, create your own joy. Don't be dependent on something or somebody else to do it. Create your own joy. Be joyful, because you will be a better person for it. And we all become better when we all do that. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And until next time, bye y'all.